Today I'm just going to explain how your mind works and how you can use it to your best advantage. Okay. So the thing is, we have two aspects of the mind. We have that part of the mind called the conscious, and that's the bit we think we're clever with. It's the bit that we're aware that we're either clever or we think we're not clever. but it holds 8 bits of data. So if I now told you my phone number 1 digit at once, that would fill up all those 8 spaces in your head. And if I then said, oh, remember that, and I carried on talking, you could either remember the number or listen to me, but you can't do both. That's how little value your conscious mind has for storage. Okay? So, the reason we have an unconscious mind is because we have to store programs that run our lives. So you won't want to come in here and have to go, that's a chair. Oh, what's a chair do? Oh, you sit on it. Well, who would remember to tell you to sit on it and that? You have to have a program that goes, that's a chair. Now, none of you have seen these chairs before, but you knew it was a chair and you knew you had to sit on it. Right? So there's all these programs running in your head, and it runs your heart and your lungs and your pH acidity in your stomach and everything. And it has done since the second you were born. So you're born with this series of programs that's about survival. And fortunately, we're born with parents that then look after us until we're old enough to leave the nest. And that's quite long in humans, which is not very long in animals. They just kick you out and go, get on with it. But we have this period of time as a human that we develop and we learn stuff. And all the learning that you take from that, you carry into your later life. So when something happens and we have a new circumstance, the brain goes, the unconscious part of the brain goes, what does that match up with? What have we done that's like this before? And however clever you are, if you do something new for the first time, you just feel like a raw amateur at it, because you feel stupid, you feel clumsy and everything else, and then you do it 10 times, you feel better, you do it 1,000 times, you get really good at it, and after a few thousand times, you just do it. And you don't think about it, you can think about something else as well. Because like I say, your conscious brain only holds that little bit of data. So we can't really do... It's said that guys can't multitask and women do. But nobody multitasks. You can actually literally only think about one thing at once. Right? Women are very good at doing lots of things sequentially and knowing that they have to do them sequentially, whereas a guy goes, you know, me go to work, me brought wages home. There you are, done my bit. Right? The typical old-fashioned family, of course. So we have this thing of the unconscious will run everything for you. And we just interrupt it now and again. So this morning when you got up, you had the choice. It's a bit frosty. Shall I go to the show? Shall I not? And you obviously chose to come here. I'm very clever at that, aren't I? I've just worked that one out. So that's why we have the conscious brain, because we can then decide. We stop being animal-like. We can decide we'll do this today, we'll wear these clothes today. But lots of other things sneak up on us. So our emotions, somebody pulled me up on once on saying that thoughts make our emotions. And they said, oh no, your emotions come first and then the thoughts. But what they were thinking about was you get the emotion and then with your conscious brain you go, what's this about? I feel like this today. Why do I feel like that? So that's your conscious thought. But to get that thought, to get that feeling, there had to be a thought that triggered it off to make the chemicals for it. Okay, so if you're depressed one day, it's not that your brain, if you go to a psychologist and you say I've got depression, they'll say it's a chemical imbalance in your brain that's causing it. Wrong, totally wrong. It's the other way around. Your thought processes cause the chemicals. And if you have enough of those bad thought processes, eventually the chemicals that are going around your body are those of the negative side of things. You're also wiring your brain up to look constantly for bad things that's going to happen. And if you feel anxious or you feel depressed, you're looking out for the danger and everything else. And we get what we look for. We spot what we look for. if you see, if in the darkness you see this shadowy figure in the bushes and you think, oh, it's somebody following me, you react as though somebody's following you. And then you realise it's a black dustbin bag that's got trapped in a tree and it's just shaking a bit. And then suddenly your chemicals go back to, oh, it's all right. Right? So we make our own chemicals. And I'm going to prove that now. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to understand first that this is joy everywhere in the world. Okay, that's joy. You win the lotto, you will be doing this. Right? You won't be doing, oh, win the lotto. Okay, you won't be doing that. Okay, so what I'm going to ask you to do now is I'm going to ask you to put your shoulders back and sit up straight. Right? And I want you to think of something really happy. Something that really brings a smile to your face. Okay? And as you do that, just understand you're now getting happy chemicals going around the body. Right? And as you do that, though, I want you to go into more of a depressive state by closing your shoulders in and just leaning forward and putting your head down. But try and keep the happy state. Right? Very difficult. Now, stay down there, please. I didn't tell you to move. And as you stay down there, just I want you to change over and think of something slightly sad now. Not too sad. I can't deal with all of you being sad. Right? And as you think of that sad thing, now come back up to the joyous position and try and hold on to that sadness. Anybody holding on to the sadness? It's difficult. It's difficult. So the two things work together. So when people have physical illnesses, aches and pains and everything else, it can be caused by an emotional process. And it will trap that emotion in your body. If you've ever done a sport, whether it's tennis or golf or whatever, you build up a muscle memory. So when you're first doing it, things like golf, it's like, oh, you have to bend your legs a bit. Oh, you have to hold this arm straight, this arm bends. And there's so many things. Keep your head up, watch where the ball's going, and then you hit it and you forget one of those things and the ball just goes anywhere. Right? And the same with tennis. It sort of goes all over the place. But after you've done it so many times and you watch where the ball's going, you have a lot more control over it. And yet there's multiple angles and speeds and your brain's making fantastic calculations to do all that. But just from experience. But it knows which muscle to tell it. And you're not going, oh, I need to hit this with my right hand. I need to send a signal down there. Your unconscious is doing all that. It's just reacting. In fact, in something like baseball, they throw the ball so fast that actually there's no time to decide anything. They're just looking at the guy's arm movements and going, well, I think the ball's going to come here. And they're moving the bat in the way. Okay? Now, I'm 63 now, but last year I got £20 from my mother, bless her, and I put it in my wallet, and Trudy, my partner, says, what are you going to do with that then? I said, well, it just, you know, go in with everything else. And she said, buy yourself something special. So guess what I bought? A unicycle. So I get this, and she goes, what the hell are you doing? I went, well, I only put £8 to it. It's only like £28 for a unicycle. So I then look at all these videos, and I'm looking at these videos, and it says it takes between 10 to 15 hours to learn to ride a unicycle, and you keep falling off it. And I thought, right, I'm going to do it in an hour. I'm going to allow my unconscious to learn this in an hour. But this is an hour made up of 30 seconds every few days. So I get on this unicycle, and the first time I got on it, I mean, you just get nowhere. But now I must have done probably 30 minutes in total now, and I can balance on it. I'd still have the door handle there, but I'm doing this. Because my memory is going, oh, this is how it works. And in between the 30 seconds and the next 4 days, it's still working on that. That's how it works. It carries on with that process. So I'm getting better without even practicing. And I just nip on 10 days later or whatever, and that's another 30 seconds. And I seem to have got better. So we have this conjunction between the two. And when I've helped people in the past, I usually help them through the head get rid of anxiety. And then the rest of them melts into this relief and everything else, and it seems to disappear from the body. And I actually hug people at the end of a session, and that is a bit like Columbo. You know when he reaches for the door and he goes, ah, just one more thing, you're the murderer. You know when he does that? Well, as somebody leaves me, if I just have the slightest inkling it's not quite there, I give them a hug, and that hug tells me whether they're sorted out or not. And I will do the Columbo thing of, I just remembered something, just take a seat back down there. And I'll do as long as it takes to actually then make sure that the last bit's finished off. Because I just get that clue from them. Because the feedback is, it's, if you've just lost 45 years of anxiety, you're pretty relaxed, I'll tell you. And you're pretty joyous. So if I get the tension in there, there's something trapped still. And I had a lady with depression who I was really struggling to help, because it comes on the same as anxiety, but it sort of, you cling to it, you keep clinging to it because it's a safety thing for you. And you've learnt not to deal with confrontation. And I got a bit like counselling, where you tell the same story over and over again, you can re-traumatise yourself. So I didn't want to take her back to what her trauma was. And so I learnt a thing called access consciousness bars, or some people know as bars. Anybody heard of it? Yeah. Okay, so I looked at several different things that would release things from the body. And everybody said, oh, here's the cure for depression. And I would pay like 300 quid for a course. I'm still trying to help this woman that's hardly paying me any money now to come along. And but I was determined to find the answer for depression. And I kept buying these courses, and nobody did the answer. Because when I listened to the materials, it just wasn't going to help anyway with depression. And I'd remember releasing something from myself by physically shaking. It's a long story, but I was in a monastery. Somebody did meditation with me, and I just went into abreaction and shook this thing out of me. And so I looked for that, and even that didn't work. And I tried it on my partner, and that didn't work. So that was another refund I got. But I came across access consciousness bars, where you touch the head and it actually releases mental programs out of your head and body at the same time. And if somebody's got really bad, they'll twitch about on the chair and all sorts of things. And after a few sessions, they twitch less. And then they get to this calm state because you're actually releasing those mental programs. So now that I've made you aware that you've got a consciousness and an unconsciousness, and the unconscious does most of it, what you have to understand, if there's anything you're struggling with in life, it's rarely the circumstances that you're in at the moment. Right? They will add to it, or you will think it's the circumstances or whatever, and it's okay to feel an emotion about something that's happening at the time. You know, the loss of somebody, or you crash your car or whatever. It's all right in that moment to feel, oh God, you know, this has happened and this is terrible or whatever. And feel however you feel. Right? But if that carries on and on and on over the years, you're holding on to that thing. And the only reason we hold on to things is because we haven't quite learned the lesson from it. Because everything we've learned over the period of time, we've learned the lesson, we've kept repeating it and repeating it until we've gone, I know how to do this now. Like letting the clutch out on your car. So difficult the first time you did it, wasn't it? Yeah. Accelerator, clutch. Ooh. Now look in the mirror. No, I can't do that as well. And you can't. And now you just do it. And now you chat. You can do anything at the same time. Right? So everything we learn, we then incorporate that. So when a new circumstance comes up, we match it and go, what happened the last time this happened? Right? And if it's something that's still bugging you and changes your state, you have learned the wrong lesson. Right? So back here, something happens. Now, anxiety is simply, something happens when you're younger, when you're not able to rationalise what happens. And you go, oh, I don't want to feel like this again. I don't know what this is, but I don't want to feel like this again. And the brain goes, oh, I'll make a program for you. Right, what happened just before you got hurt? Oh, well, this happened, right? If you fell off your bike, oh, I was on a bike. This is why they say if you fall off a bike, get on it again. Because you instantly train the brain that it's all right to be on a bike. But if you don't get back on it, you never get back on it. Because then the program is, it hurts if you get on a bike. Wrong program. It hurts when you fall off a bike. Doesn't hurt when you get on it. But if you don't get on it again, you can't fall off it. So you've learned the wrong lesson. So anxiety, when we have that sudden feeling of, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? It's fight or flight. And we go, okay, right. If I see this coming next time, I'll prepare for it. And then I'll have the answer to what to do. Or I might be able to run off. Or I might be able to fight them. Or I might be able to have this defensive thing that I put in the way. So anxiety is literally, you're constantly looking around going, I know there's danger here somewhere. I know something bad's going to happen. And you just, for the rest of your life, have that feeling that something bad's going to happen. This is a protective state for you. It's a state that your unconscious mind thinks is good. It's taking you to this wonderful place of protection. No, it's not. It's horrible. So when I've dealt with anxiety, it's different to depression. When I help somebody over anxiety, they have a week where they might phone me and go, I'm a bit anxious, the anxiety might come back. And I'll go, well, you had it for 45 years. That's quite likely you would be anxious. But wait for the rest of the week and then phone me. Nobody's ever phoned me after a week because it just goes. Absolutely. I'm still in touch with lots of them and they're still fine. But with depression, what happens is something happens. You go to the fight or flight mode and that passes and you still haven't done anything. You haven't run or you haven't hidden or whatever. And you go, play dead. And in that play dead moment, you learn that when conflict happens, you hide from it. And you never ever face confrontation. You're forever running away from it. And so you think that everything that's out there that makes you depressed is other people. It's what they say. It's not. It's all in here. Right? The only reality we have is in our thoughts. Because two different people will see the same things and they'll think different things about it. Right? So if you think that something happened to you a long time ago, what have you got left of that now? And unless you had a baby and that was quite traumatic, you've now got the child to show for it. But you haven't got the baby anymore, have you? Right. So anything that happens to you, when you think back to it now, however traumatic it was, it doesn't exist anymore, except in your head. And it's a memory. And you can change that memory. You can change it for something different. I've dealt with a lot of people with grief. And I get the extreme end of grief. A woman came to see me once and her sister had been murdered. And she actually went to the court and heard the grisly tale of her sister's death. And then visualised it in her head because there was so much detail there that she imagined the murder. And then every time she thought about her sister, she just saw her being murdered in her head. So she was now playing a video of something she'd never watched. And she played this every time she thought about her sister. No wonder she was distressed. Her sister got murdered in her head every day. And when I chatted to her, I just said, well, how long did you know your sister for? And it was like 23 years or something. Did you have a great time together? She said, yeah. I said, okay, we'll do this technique now and I'm going to swap the video of her being murdered for the video of you two playing together. And that's what we did. And so now she thinks of her sister, she remembers this wonderful, happy person and that she had a life for all those years, not the moment she died. And that's what we're doing. We're just playing videos in her head that hurt us. The simple answer is stop it. Okay.
Can I say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
That what you've just explained there has happened to me in several different occasions. Because I had a fatality. Because a train driver and an inspector. And that used to reoccur in my mind.
Absolutely.
Seeing the person.
And has it gone now?
I've got rid of it now.
Good. Okay.
Because it's happened to several other people and I haven't been around because I know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
But the other people that it's happened to, that's why you keep a person driving the train, even though that they've had a fatality or riding a bike, as you said, or driving a car because of something like what you've gone through.
So it's your last memory of things. Yeah, sorry.
You get rid of that previous picture so they can drive the train and or car or whatever, that they cancel that previous picture out. Because with me...
you're carrying on with it.
Yeah. With what I had to do as an inspector, I had to go under the train.
Yeah, sorry, can I just stop you there so people don't know
the thing is,
Okay. Thank you very much. Take care. Okay, so I'll chat to you afterwards about that.
Okay.
So we're going to do it. How are we doing for time?
1 o'clock.
Lovely. Okay, plenty of time then. No, it's all right. No. I don't need to talk too much because people then form mental images of themselves and things. Okay, so we're going to do a few, we're going to do at least one technique. We might do more because we have the time. So I want you to take something that bothers you and get that in your head. Right? Okay, it can be anything you like. You can start with something small and then do something bigger when you get home, but not anything that you're going to get really distressed about, but something that's bugging you. Okay, so think about it just for a second or two. Okay. I want you to pop your hand out in front of you, whichever hand you normally use for things. And I want you to cup it as though you're going to hold something. Okay? you were there, weren't you? Okay. So, now, take that thing out of your head. In fact, you can reach up with your other hand and take that thing out of your head that you've got, that problem, and drop it onto your hand. And I want you to make this as real as possible. You've now taken that thought out of your head and you put it in your hand. Now, on your hand is written negative. It's tattooed on there, on that side. And on the back of your hand, we're going to have positive in a minute. Okay, but you've got the negative thing that you've got there that's bothering you. And you don't want that anymore, do you? Okay? So, I want you to give it a shape and a form and a texture. And feel the weight of it. If it's something that's bothering you, it'd be quite heavy. It won't be light. Okay? And just bounce your hand up and down. Just feel the weight of it. So it's got a texture, form, colour, smell. Give it a smell. Give it a noise, even if it's annoying, buzzing noise or anything. Just give it a noise to it. Okay? And when you've made it as real as you can, I want you to flick your hand over quickly. Right? Okay, now. You've let go of what it is that was negative to you. You can put your hand down now while I explain the rest of it. Whatever you thought of then, it will be phrased in the negative, like, I don't want this, or that was horrible, or it'll have something like that, okay? So that's a negative. Now, your unconscious mind doesn't understand negatives. Whatever we tell it, it will look for us. You know, I don't want to be bullied is, I would like to be bullied, because you're thinking about being bullied. I don't want to hit that golf ball in the water, splosh. I don't want to hit that tree with my car, well, stop looking at the tree and look at the road. Okay? So whatever we think about, the unconscious has no understanding that this might be bad for you. It just keeps hearing you harp on about it and it goes, I'll get that for you. Right? So whatever you've got in your mind there, if you take the negative words away from it, right, that's what you've asked for in your head. And would you like to get that? No. So I want you to now think of the exact opposite of that. So what you were thinking about is what you didn't want to happen. So what would you like to happen? And I now want you to think of that. Now, has everybody got that? Now, if you haven't got that and you don't mind, just tell me and I'll tell you how to phrase it in the positive. Okay? Have you got the exact opposite of it? So you'll now have a statement that says, I would like, has everybody got that? If you haven't, please tell me. You're not looking so sure. Oh, you're all right with it. Okay, young lady, yep. Okay, so this is what we can do. This is the decluttering of a mind, is that you can't wait for every single negative thought that comes up and then go, right, I've got to turn that into a positive. Because according to science, we have about 80,000 negative thoughts a day. And that's for people who aren't depressed, right? Or in terrible circumstances. That's everybody, average. So if you catch everyone out, you'll drive yourself crazy. But for things that bother us, what's actually happening is it's going back to a period of time when there was something that was unresolved. And the reason it keeps popping in your mind is it's going, but what's the answer then? Because it wants to run a program. And it needs to know the finished bit of the program. So, for instance, let's take relationships. If you're in a relationship and you think it's all hunky-dory, but then your partner leaves you, that's more difficult to deal with than if you leave your partner. Because if you leave your partner, you've resolved why you're leaving them and that you need to and you want to or it's best for you or whatever. So when you leave, it's not difficult. But if somebody leaves you, there's so many unfinished questions. And the trouble is you don't get the truth because you'll ask them, you go, is it another person? And they'll go, no, I'd never do that. And it is. And all sorts of things come up. And then you go, well, was it me? Did I drive them away? And whilst you keep asking the same questions, you'll get the same answers, which is, I don't know. Right? So if there's anything really troubling you, you have to do this thing. I keep thinking about this thing. Okay, so what do I need to learn from it? What is the thing I would like to get from this? And if it's, there's a person I know who keeps picking not only the same type of guys, but they look identical. I can't remember which partner she's with because it's like, are you Fred, John, or Harry? You know, it's in fact, my sister at one event went, "Don't tell me it's Richard, isn't it?" And he went, "No, it's." She went, oh dear. And she just keeps picking the same person after person. At some point, she'll come to the conclusion that all men are no good, and that will be her program, and then she'll avoid men. Or she'll accept that all men are no good and she'll find yet another no good guy. But if she actually looks at it carefully and says, I always end up with guys who look like this and behave like this, what am I trying to do with that? I was travelling off to one event and I was thinking about, I used to do cottages up and things when I was younger and houses. And the reality is that I didn't want to buy a house that somebody else had put a 10 grand kitchen in that I didn't like and pay the extra money for the house because it's got a nice kitchen and then rip the kitchen out and put a 10 grand kitchen in. So, and then I realised that I always did places up or did do it because I was capable of doing it, but also it put my stamp on it. And then I started relating that to relationships. Lots of people get do-uppers for partners. Right? And it's because we're nice people and we see they need a bit of help. But just think of it from this angle as well. You're able to put your stamp on them if you do them up. They become your cottage. Right. And the problem is we end up falling in love with what we see, but we don't. We fall in love with what they might be when we've done them up. And if anybody's ever done up houses, you don't live in them after you've done them up. You buy the next bloody door up and you move into that. And then you keep buying door uppers. And you never live in a finished house. And we do that with relationships. We get the one that needs doing up and then we get fed up of doing it up because it's not taking any notice. And then we get another one that needs doing up and we carry on doing that. And there's a lot of people recognising this. Okay, so what I need to say is that, you see, reality is it's a difficult concept. The only reality we have is in our head. I have a depressive client who, when she's up, it's fine. Everything's rational and sensible. When she's depressed, she comes out with downright lies. So one week she'll come in, and I can see from her face that she's down, and she'll say, nobody loves me, I'd be better off dead, they'd all be better off without me, and she does all this. And I say, last week you came in and you were up, and you said, thank God that I saved your life, because your kids would be hurting now, and your husband would be hurting, and it would be so horrible. And strangely, she came to me the day she was about to take her own life, and I helped her, And 2 weeks later, she was walking through a small town, and an elderly woman mistakenly stepped off the road in front of a taxi, and she ran in the road and pulled her out of the road. And this woman would have died. So her life, 2 weeks later, she would have took her own life, and 2 weeks later, she would have missed the opportunity to have saved this other woman's life. It's amazing. It's just this knock-on thing of, but it's just thoughts. And every problem she's got is just in her thoughts. But she's had depression for so long, it's wired her brain up to look for all the problems in life. So if we start to look at, if you've got lots of things going around in your head, just understand this also, that if we keep looking for the answers for everything, we don't really look for the answer. We look at the problem and we chew over the problem. We don't say, what do I want as an outcome from this? Or we get too specific about the outcome. I'm not a big fan of goal setting. I know it works because I was in sales once and I always met my targets, but I never got a lot above the target. Because once I met my target, that was it. I was satisfied. But I would push myself, and I actually collapsed a few times because I just pushed myself too much to meet the targets. But my understanding of goals now is that you fix the idea of what you want. You then have to work out all the steps to get there. But we all know that if we try and head there, we'll come to here and there'll be a little detour. And then we'll have to go around that. And then we'll go around here and then there'll be another detour. And then we'll keep trying to head there. So you're no good planning any more than the first step. Because if you want to go on the straight line, it's not going to be there. None of this is going to happen. None of these bits here. Your intent is there. And in fact, as you go along here, and even if it goes well, you'll be heading towards that. And then you go, I don't want that anymore. I want that thing over there. And then you only need the first step of that. Because when we look for an answer, as soon as we have the answer, all the other opportunities are missing. Absolutely everything out there that could have been the answer is now fixed into. So even if I say to you, would you like A, B or C? If I do that, you now think there's only A, B or C. You're not now thinking about D, G, all the other ones. So if we have an open mind to opportunities that come in, somehow they come in. That there's, I'm not quite sure with the unconscious what it tunes into or how it tunes into, but we're all connected. There's a universal unconsciousness out there that we can tap into. And it doesn't mean you can read it like a book and go, oh, what's the answer to this, and it gives it. But what you have to do is say, I'm interested in this and I want to know a lot more about it. Like I've been studying depression now for 9 months. And so many things come to me that I wake up with answers. And I do a lot of research on that, but it triggers off what's happening and how that works and what that. And I'm matching and mixing things and going, ah, that could help, that would be helpful. A few days ago, my partner has now joined the business from a job she didn't like. And I said, well, look, we've got to sort all the admin out and everything because I'm not good at doing that. I can be, but I can't be bothered. And one of the things I said was, try and get me some talks for like the Women's Institute and that. Check some addresses and things and get them all put down, but don't contact anybody yet. And what I'll do is I'll get a paper together for you that says, this is what Stephen does, and then I'll give you a list of talks. And then when you chat to them, you can have that, and whatever they ask you, you can answer it. I've been doing this for about 6 years now. I've never had anybody ring me up and said, we'll pay you, come and do a talk. It's never happened in 6 years. The day she is working on people doing this, I get an email from somebody she hasn't even researched who says, I was wanting guest speakers, and I spoke to Eric from the Mansfield Show, and he said you were very good. Would you like to come to our event? I'll give you 50 quid. How weird. What, 6 years worth of days? I mean, that's like 2,000 days. In 2,000 days, nobody has ever. But the day Trudy's looking up me having speaking events, one comes in. And this happens to me daily. There are so many things that happen because I'm open to opportunities. And we sit down every morning and we go, what are we going to do today? And Trudy does her list. And something interrupts me, and I found this wonderful opportunity that I run with all day while Trudy gets on with proper jobs. But so many opportunities are coming in now, and there's a clarity about life and things. So I just want you to understand that whatever you're thinking, it might not be real, and it might seem very real because the emotions are there. But all those emotions are attached to something in the back, in the past, that you're matching. And you're wrong matching. I don't know how to simplify this, but Trudy and I had a misunderstanding the other day. We got on really great, and we probably had 3 misunderstandings in 2 years. She mentioned something, and I said something back to her, and I understood how difficult something would be, but she didn't understand that, and she knew how easy something would be, but I didn't understand that. She didn't understand my point of view either. And for a few days, there was a little bit of a tension there. And then we just sat down and chatted. And when we chatted, we both wanted exactly the same thing. But we just had something in the background that we weren't aware of about each other, that just interfered with it. And so quite often when something happens, particularly with a partner that we've got, and they say something, we can snap at them. We're not actually snapping at them. We're snapping at a previous partner for what we should have told them at the time, and that would have sorted them out. And the poor new person gets it. and this is why sometimes you say something and World War III erupts and you think, what did I just say? And you have no idea. You can't work it back to that. But within them, it's something's changed. And you see, we exaggerate things. We take things and we make them into big stuff that are not. I had a friend who, her father had died, and he was very ill. I mean, he'd got diabetes, he'd lost a leg, he was blind, he'd got heart problems, and I think they put a do not resuscitate on him. And he actually had a heart attack while she was there, and it was all very distressing and things. She was going to sue the hospital, all sorts of things from grief. But she came to see me a few weeks later and said, the doctor said, and she reeled off this sentence. I wish I could remember what it was. And it doesn't really matter. But in my head was like, no doctor would ever say that. Particularly at that sort of time. No doctor would say that. So I actually said to her, are you sure he said those words? And she said, yes, absolutely. And I was going to see her the following week, and she was a friend, not a client. And I chewed this over all week, and it just didn't ring true with me. And so the day she came to see me, suddenly it sprang into my head what he actually would have said that made sense and fitted the time and everything else. So when she came in, she was still choked about this. And she started saying, and he said, and I went, oh, can I just stop you? Did he actually say, and I reeled off this new sentence that I'd made up. And she said, yes, he did actually, but he meant what I said. And this is the problem. We take meaning from things, and when we take the wrong meaning from it, it's appropriate to us. It's not their head you're getting it from, right? If we don't think much about ourselves, we'll think that everybody else doesn't think much of us. Because, how long have we got? There's so much exciting stuff to tell you. What time is it? Anybody?
Nearly
20 past one. All right. We might have quick enough to do this. Okay. Very quick technique. Anybody suffering from low self-esteem? Anybody less than a 10? All of you? Come on. Okay. I'm not going to ask you to give me the number, but I want you to give yourself a number right now. 10 out of 10 is, I'm okay, I like myself, I'm all right. You might not love yourself, but, you know, you're fine. That's a 10. Naught is, I don't really rate myself, I don't even know why anybody else likes me. Okay. So just get that number in your head. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you something quickly. Whatever number you've got there, put a naught on the end of it. So if you've got a 3, turn it into a 30. You are living life at 30% of what it could be. If you're a 9, you're living life at 90% of what it could be. If you're a 10, you're living life how it should be. Okay. Now, the reason you've got that low value of self-esteem is sometime in the past, because we're all born as tens, as I say quite crudely, because you cry and somebody shoves a tit in your mouth. And so you get fed, you get your bum changed, you get all sorts of things just by making a noise. And so you're some sort of god. So you're born as a 10. But somewhere along the line, we do, oh, look at me, I can tap dance. And somebody ignores you or hits you or something. Oh, don't show off. Stop it, Stephen. Right? Tell it happened to me, can't I? And I was called a big head. And I had this enormous dome on the back of my head. And I was like, I can't help being a big head. It's actually just me. That's how it works. So at some point, we get that knocked out of us. And if we hear it often enough and we lower this sort of thing, it's almost like head above the parapet thing. If you're a 3 and you think you're a 3, you daren't be a 4 because somebody will shoot you. But while you behave like a 3, everybody ignores you because that's the level you are. Or so you think. So you carry through life at this number. And then what I'd like to say is, so that's based on what other people thought of you, right? Because you tried to show them whatever and they ignored you. But now you're all adults. So I want you to understand that that number I asked you for, I didn't say what do other people think about you, I asked what you think about you. All right? And I'm going to tell you now, because I've done this with hundreds of people and it worked every time, is I want you to take that number and understand that because this is a number that you're giving to yourself, and you can change that number in an instant now, and you will live life at a so many percentage higher, I want you to raise that up to a number that you can find acceptable. Just close your eyes for a second, give yourself that number, and feel what it like, what it's like to have that new higher number. Okay? Now, I'm not going to ask you to become a 10, but if you want to be a 10, just go straight to it. I had two people in a joint session the other day. One went from a 3 out of 10 to a 10, and the other one went from 0 to a 10 in an instant. In fact, she went to an 8. Sorry, even by the time the session finished, she said, no, I'm having a 10 now. Okay? And at any point in the future, you can adjust this up. If it's not a 10, you can decide to have a 10. Because this is not reliant on anybody. You can open your eyes now. This is not reliant on anybody but you. Because you will always live your life at that number, not allowing yourself to receive, not thinking that you're worthy. And everything that everybody else says to you, you'll filter through that number. So a woman came to have a pain switched off for arthritis. Very attractive woman. Everything going for her. She didn't like her appearance. It was like, absolutely nothing wrong with it. She was beautiful. And she just didn't have that knowledge that she was beautiful. Because she thought she might be showing off if she knew it. Really weird. So you can change this. So hopefully you've moved up a few points. Anybody want to feedback how many points they moved up? Arthur?
I think I moved myself up from an 8 to a 9.
Brilliant. Well, an 8's a good start anyway.
So it's a bit of leeway.
Yeah, okay. So lots of people start really low. I mean, I have people who come in at noughts and ones and twos and things, and my intention is to get them to at least an 8 before they leave, but I have a lot longer with them. So please take that away with you and understand that how you value yourself is how other people will treat you or how you will let them treat you. I dealt with somebody being bullied the other day, and she was the one that went from a 3 to a 10, and I said, now they've got nothing to pick on. Now you have your own self-worth. You don't need to get it from anybody else.
I'll give you an instance that years ago, I used to dislike myself. And I used to wonder, but I thought, I'm a really actually a nice person. So why do people keep reacting badly towards me or not liking me? And it's basically what I was giving off, I was getting back.
Absolutely. And it's a really weird one. That I see Facebook statements like, my attitude doesn't depend on something, it depends on you. And I'm thinking, why would you give your attitude away to everybody else? My attitude is the same to everybody. In fact, if somebody's horrible, can you imagine their life? If they're horrible to everybody, are they ever going to get love and affection? No. So if you show somebody who's horrible love and affection, it blows their mind. And doesn't that want to change them to be more affectionate? To join in? Because if everybody's horrible to somebody who's horrible, how are they ever going to learn to be nice? They don't think anybody else is nice because they've never seen nice. Because they always got a reaction to them. But we do so much of this, oh, I think that she thinks this of me. Well, that's rubbish. That's what you think about you. Because you're all rubbish at mind reading. You can't go in somebody else's head and extract that they don't like you. You can only do that if you don't like you. You're not extracting that from their head, you're extracting it from yours. And if we've got time, I'll tell you a very quick one. This woman that came to see me on a regular basis, and I knew that she didn't think much of herself, but she didn't know that. But she kept telling me about all these people she'd fallen out with, and I kept saying, you're thinking that they don't like you, therefore you're reacting in a way that what they've said, you alter the statement, and you're changing it into something it's not. And I did this for several weeks running. She was just a friend. And she came one week, and she's smiling because she's always reacted to this, well, I don't think you're right. And then she said, I can prove you wrong, because somebody the other day told me I was horrible. And I went, okay. I said, so let's change the subject quickly. I said, have you got a friend who's nice? I want you to think of the nicest friend you've got. So I want you to all think of the nicest friend you've got, right? Now, have they ever said anything bad about anybody? No, because they're nice. That's why they are nice, because they don't say horrible things about other people. So just think of somebody you know who's horrible. What do? They always say horrible things about other people, right? And if you leave the room, you're the one they say the horrible things about. And when you're in the room, they talk about everybody else that's horrible, as though you're nice, right? So she said, so this woman told me I was horrible. So I went, okay, so was this you going into her head and extracting it that you're horrible? She said, no. So I said, whose head did it come from? She said, her head. So I said, okay, so you told me about your nice friend who only says nice things about nice people. So horrible people can only say horrible things. So what is she? She said, she's horrible. So I said, so that wasn't you extracting that you're horrible and putting it in her head. It's the fact that she's horrible that she said horrible things about you. And she went, yeah. So I said, so why was I wrong then? And that's what it is. We take everything, we twist it. We listen to what people say and we move it around to fit our number. Because we won't believe it. It's called cognitive dissonance. If you believe in something and somebody tells... If you believe somebody's really good and somebody tells you something horrible about them, it just won't go in. But if you believe somebody's bad, like Donald Trump, and they could put anything down and say, Donald Trump's, you know, ripped a baby's head off, and you go, just like him. And you believe it, because it doesn't distort what you believe about them. Yeah. Right? So when you raise this belief in you, and I'm telling you, as soon as you can get to 10, go there, right, your life will change, absolutely and without doubt. Okay, I've been Stephen Blake, you've been a lovely audience.